Welcome back to issue 21 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's not only legally allowed to drink now, but briefly hung out with the Wonder Twins in the 70s. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, Dave McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
Wonderful.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Now, if you've actually listened to the Film Actually podcast, you'll know what that's all about.
Listen closely. There's probably, now that we're legally allowed to drink, because we're up to 21 episodes, there's a drinking game that you can play every time you hear us say fantastic or absolutely.
I think I'm already drunk, Richard. It's all right.
And we won't let the audience know that this is our second attempt at the show today.
No, not at all. No. And I won't cut that out. So, Richard, what's on the show today?
Well, this week, our favorite mountain man, Moore, makes merry with these gentlemen. Smallville Season 11 gets some more details. And Rob Liefeld, Prophet of Doom. Then Warner Brothers sets a date for the 300 sequel, The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Season 2 is on its way, plus our hottest reads from this week's releases and our kick-ass picks of the week, The New 52, 6 and a bit months on.
Just a bit.
Just a bit. But first, another bit of fun. Here's our vintage clip of the week.
All systems are jammed. We can't reduce speed.
Oh, no. We're headed straight for the island of Hawaii.
This is Submarine Seahawk calling the Super Friends. Seahawk to Super Friends. Emergency.
Moments later, at the Hall of Justice.
I repeat, this is Submarine Seahawk. We're out of control on a collision course with Hawaii. Hurry!
I'm in the Pacific right now. I'll take care of the submarine.
I'll fly out there and give him a hand.
Put your face mask on, Black Vulcan. We're going down. There's the sub.
We're 5 miles to the coast and closing fast, Captain.
We've got 5 minutes before impact. Where are the Super Friends?
We're right behind you, Captain. We'll have you stopped in a minute.
I'll stop that sub, Aquaman. Then you tow it to shore.
If I can cut the propellers off with my lightning bolts, it should stop the sub.
Captain, engine room reports flooding. There's a gash in the bulkhead.
Great lightning! I've got to weld the hole closed before the sub goes down.
As Black Vulcan skillfully seals the threatening gash, another deadly problem arises in the sub's nuclear reactor.
It's no use, Aquaman. I can't risk cutting off the second prop.
That's okay, Black Vulcan. We still have the use of my underwater friends.
Aided by his marine telepathy, Aquaman summons two underwater friends.
Moments and later, at the Hall of Justice.
I have to close the hole. How many innuendos can you fit into one clip?
The 60s cartoons, man, there's a million of them. I love the fact that he goes, Black Vulcan. Black Vulcan says, I will use my lightning bolts. He goes, bzz, bzz. It's kind of fizzled on him a little bit there, don't you think?
What are the odds of him doing lightning underwater and it not shorting the thing out?
Or frying everybody else around.
I don't think there would have been too many of Aquaman's underwater friends.
They're all floating belly up on the surface.
Underwater friends? Underwater friends, what happened?
Oh, dearie me. Where do you find this stuff, Richard?
I have a lot of time.
Yeah, I can gather that.
Now, what we're doing this week, we really need a jingle for this section, but we don't have one yet. But what we've been reading this week, we're going to mix it up a little bit and just keep things fresh every week. We're going to actually look at the new releases that have come out as much as possible, because a lot of stuff comes out every week and we're not going to catch up with it any other way than forcing ourselves to read it on this section.
Mm, true.
So a whole lot of issue 7s came out this week from DC's New 52, some new stuff from Vertigo, a stack of new stuff from Marvel, both their main universe and a few of their alternative lines of books as well. So we thought we'd just sort of quickly run through some of those and tell you what we thought about them.
We also have to pay attention a little bit to some of the independent releases as well.
Absolutely.
Because I noticed that Dynamite has just launched a new Planet of the Apes series, because they've been doing the Planet of the Apes for a while. They've just started releasing Exile of the Planet of the Apes. Of course, there's been new issues of Vampirella this week as well. And also, I read Nancy Goes to Hell on Earth, which is the second part to the Nancy Goes to Hell series, right, which is into issue 2 now, which also came out this week.
Okay.
So there's been a bunch in the independent world as well. So we got to make sure we also take into account some of these guys, because some of them are producing some very interesting stuff.
Yeah, and if there's anything in particular you guys that are reading at the moment that you'd like us to give a shout-out to on the show, let us know on comics@geekactually.com or just hit us up on the Facebook, which is facebook.com/behindthepanels.
Absolutely. Not the real bits, as you said last week.
No. You can go there, too. I like you to go there.
Absolutely.
But back to the comics. Okay, so the DC New 52 this week, the absolute must-reads that came out, at least as far as I'm concerned, would have to be Batman, Justice League, and to a lesser extent, Nightwing.
I actually haven't read the Nightwing yet. I've been enjoying Nightwing, actually.
Nightwing's really good. Nightwing and Batman this week are essential to kind of read together because you get two sides of the same story.
And they're doing crossovers in which they are referring to each other's books.
Well, what's happening is from next month, I think, there's going to be a huge Court of Owls crossover.
Right, okay.
So that's what they've been building up to.
Well, considering that, spoilers here, there is a small army on the rise at the moment. So,
well, which is kind of where issue 7 of Batman leads us.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's actually a really good book at the moment because those of you who have read Batman 7 and Nightwing number 7 will know that Batman and Nightwing have a bit of a confrontation in this episode, in this issue. And they, Batman backhands Nightwing.
Yeah. But it's actually very interesting.
And really smacks him too. It's not just like a little, hey, friendful, playful knock around. He smacks his tooth out.
Yes. And that's actually a really interesting reveal to this whole thing as well.
Yeah.
As to why. And he does it on purpose. There is a reason for it. And also I really think that it was very interesting watching Nightwing just lose it at Batman, where he basically says, "You have no idea what I've been through."
Yeah, because if Nightwing's sort of gone, and you see in the Nightwing issue that he's gone off on this whole series where he's basically come from a point where an old friend, now enemy of his, is actually not only tried to kill him, but he's found out everybody that he was involved with has kind of been against him as well. So, you know, he's been through the ringer, and I think this really shows that Nightwing's really come into his own the last few years as a strong independent character. So they're two essential reads this week. But David, I think if we're going to talk about number sevens this week, Justice League.
Now, my only complaint about Justice League this week was that there was a slightly shorter story because they've actually added a supplemental book into the back end, which we'll talk about in a minute. But as far as the actual issue of Justice League, awesome reading. This is just so much fun. This kind of is setting Justice League up as the dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
Who have the public persona where they are literally gods, and everybody is so enamored with them that they're actually calling for them to actually become the government, which I think is great. And you've got Steve Trevor, for those long-term Wonder Woman readers, who is like the love interest of Wonder Woman, basically trying to act as the intermediary between the Justice League in their satellite and floating in space, and basically the UN.
That's right.
And there's a great sequence in Justice League where he's basically on the video call to the satellite, talking to them, trying to talk to Diana. And it's just all the chaos that is going on in that is just fantastic. You've got all these various characters coming in and out with Green Lantern basically saying, send up more food.
It really, and look, it is wonderful. And I think, you know, some other guys I heard talking about this week pointed out, they're taking their time.
Yeah.
There's no rush with the series whatsoever.
Now, help me out with the timeline a little bit, because we've been struggling with the timeline on the New 52 anyway. Have we caught up with Justice League now? Because it feels like we're much later.
I think we are. I think we're slowly catching up.
Some of the books started 5 years ago.
Faster than others.
Yeah.
Because next week we're actually going to see, or next week, next issue of Justice League, it says it's Green Arrow versus Justice League. And in the last issue of Green Arrow, he actually, or the one of the last two issues, he's actually just found out that other superheroes exist. So I'm thinking, yes, we're starting to catch up with all the timelines now.
Yeah, because when we started Justice League, it was set 5 years earlier. But now it feels like when we had that issue 6, where basically it ended with somebody writing a book about them, and now this issue has come out, it feels like we've just jumped a few years.
Well, this is where issue 7 ends as well, with the guy that wrote the book saying, I've proved myth to be fact. I found objects that shouldn't exist. I've been right about so many things, but have been wrong about others.
Yeah.
And he says he knows the key to destroying the Justice League, and it's not an object or a weapon. And that's kind of where that story ends. And then we get this introductory story about Shazam. So I don't know whether that's kind of like related to each other at all.
Yeah, and it actually said at the beginning that this was going to be a continuing story for Shazam now, which means that I think the Justice League will always have Shazam at the back.
Yeah, and look, I'm not that impressed so far.
No. Look, with the big redesign of Shazam and everything, what I found really interesting about it was the fact that they spent a great deal of the supplemental issue basically talking about the wizard pulling people in to see if they were worthy.
Shazam!
Thank you very much. And he kept rejecting everybody. And then we cut to Billy Batson, and I think, okay, so we're introducing Billy Batson as the kid. And then we seem to just, and we establish that Billy Batson is, he's a turd monkey, let's face it. I mean, the kid's horrible, right? Yeah. And then suddenly in the last panel, he's Shazam. And you go, wait, we seem to have just skipped what was going on here. And it just felt to me like they were setting this up and then didn't quite know what to do with it.
Yeah. Look, the character was never that interesting to me, but the Shazam family actually became to be quite a good story ultimately. So, look, I'm interested to see where it goes, but, look, as long as it's in the back of a – unfortunately, if it's a bad story and it's taking space away from Justice League, that's the real crime here.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel. I feel like if you're going to do this, throw it out as its own issue, which could die within six issues like a lot of these things, and give the Justice League room because Justice League is awesome.
Now, I just want to quickly mention a few of the other New 52 stuff that came out this week. Birds of Prey, I recommend this one. Look, it's just a solid story. I've always loved the Birds of Prey, and this current arc is doing really well. Red Hood and the Outlaws, I wouldn't say highly recommended. It's not quite as strong as it was when it started, but I'm still really enjoying it.
I've only read up to issue 6 so far of Red Hood and the Outlaws. I haven't read the latest one yet, and I really like the fact that they've actually toned down the sluttiness of Starfire a little bit.
No, agreed, and I think it's actually
they've given her a little bit more depth. And
now that's really starting to show itself. So I think we're actually at the start of a really good run now, but we just have to let it get its feet back again.
I quite like the characters in Red Hood and the Outlaws, and I quite like the fact that we've now set up a major arcing story, which is the hunting of these strange, what are they, demons, aliens? What the deal with them? I think they're aliens, aren't they?
They're probably aliens because every other book in the DCU has got some sort of crossover in aliens, everything from Voodoo to Stormwatch and Grifter and so forth.
We'll come back to Voodoo and Stormwatch. We'll come back to a lot of those in the actual pick.
So there's two other ones I really want to mention because I know there's one you want to talk about, but Supergirl, number 7.
Yep.
Just such an awesome book.
Supergirl is getting stronger and stronger every issue. I really like the fact that we've kind of it feels to me, and we'll come back to this in the pick of the week, obviously, as well, but it feels to me like number 7s across the board are kind of like, we're now here.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like at the end of Supergirl 7, she's kind of like, you know what? I may never get home, but I can protect these people.
That's right. And I love the fact that she still can't speak English and she still doesn't really know what's going on around
her. No, that's what I really love about the book. Like, she's still it's taking its time. It's not like to go, right, she's got everything she needs now, let's just go ahead. It's like, no, we're still building the story.
And we've established three really big bad guys that will come back at some point in the future who are a definite challenge to her.
Now, and I think she's a strong woman in the DCU. Unfortunately, Wonder Woman, I know you're not terribly happy with. I've actually quite enjoyed this run, but I know you're disappointed because you read the previous run.
Yeah, look, I've got to say, Wonder Woman was a situation, we've talked about this before with the 52, which is that some of them carried through and some of them rebooted. And Wonder Woman is definitely a book where I feel like they should have carried through because J. Michael Straczynski did such a great job reinventing the character already and did this great 13-issue arc where basically she rediscovered herself and we redesigned her. And it was a really good run of Wonder Woman, and then completely threw all that away and in the New 52 just said, okay, let's start again. And I really feel like that was one of the books that should have carried through because they had done such a good job rebooting her, because what we're doing now for 7 issues, we've been navel gazing and basically she's been trying to discover herself again, and I'm actually finding myself getting really bored.
Which is a real shame because Brian Azzarello is actually one of our favorite writers here on Behind the Panels. He's done some really great work, and I love Cliff Chang's artwork, and he disappeared for a few issues, but he's back as of issue 7. Mm. And, you know, I, I'm, I liked that mythology stuff, but it was going on a little too long.
Well, and I really just don't care. Is it Hela that has come back? Who's playing around with her? And I really just don't like the character very much either. Well,
you said it best, I think, when we were talking about this yesterday on the phone, which was you just want to start seeing her kicking some ass again.
I'd like a little bit more wonder with my Wonder Woman.
Exactly right.
I mean? And it's like I want to see that tough. Look, put it this way: a couple of years ago, Wonder Woman actually killed somebody. And there was a big story arc in the DC world, and she was basically kind of rejected by man because she kind of really bent the rules a little bit too far. And even the other heroes were a little bit worried about her. And all this. I think it's one of the things that led up to the whole reboot anyway. But that was kind of where we wanted to go. We wanted her to be tough. She is an Amazon. Get tough again, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want her sitting around just moping.
Well, we want to mention one more book before we leave the DC, because we'll be talking a lot about the DCU this episode.
Yep.
And that's Catwoman. Now, Catwoman has been the subject of a lot of controversy since it started because of overt sexualization of the characters, particularly Catwoman, who is meant to be a very in-control, direct woman, but they just made her, you know, a little bit trampy. I guess.
Yeah, but you know what? I got to say, I don't mind it.
I don't mind it too much either. But the complaint this issue has got nothing to do with her overt sexuality, which is actually quite toned down now. It's more to do with the portrayal of the Greek guy in the first few panels, who comes off more as a Russian stereotype than a Greek guy.
Okay.
For example, he's got lines like, I own 6 house in 3 island, but in Gotham I have penthouse at Xanadu Hotel. Oh, I move. I am the speed demon.
in Soviet Russia.
Sure. We are slow where it counts. You know, it's just not. But I actually do like where they've kind of built her up. Otherwise, she's gotten to a point where she's actually she's got a friend, she's got someone she trusts, and she's trying to go straight, but she just gets a giddy thrill this issue stealing cars, which
Catwoman started really strong for me. I really have liked the character, and the overt sexuality, no problem for me. You know what I mean? And I actually kind of like the fact that she is really tough, but there's this kind of soft core where she gets very sensitive in places, like when her friend gets killed in an earlier issue and stuff like that. And you sit and go, you really are out of control. You don't know what you
which is.
And I like that about her. I like
Which is why it's interesting by the end of this issue, she's actually found somebody else that she's latched onto. And I think this is a very knee-jerk reaction. Mm. And I think that's going to come back to bite her.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if they can actually keep up the momentum with Catwoman.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that came out from DC this week, of course, is their Vertigo titles. And their big one this week is Dominic Laveau Voodoo Child number 1, which kind of seems to keep with DC's current, or Vertigo's current trend of capitalizing on all things supernatural. American Vampire out. They've got, what was the other one? American Vampire and iZombie.
Yep.
So now they've moved into Voodoo Child, and this one's set in New Orleans. The character of Voodoo, the character of Dominic Laveau is actually a direct descendant of Mary Laveau, the Voodoo Queen.
Oh, okay.
And at least it seems that way. Look, it's interesting, but it hasn't engaged me yet. Like, it's not. It's got some nice art in it. It's quite violent. As are all Vertigo titles.
I was going to say, it wouldn't be Vertigo if it wasn't. So,
And it's got an interesting premise of this guy that seems to be a priest type character who's using people for his dark purposes, and they've kind of set up about 5 or 6 disparate elements at the start of it, and I'm not quite sure where it's going to go yet. Unfortunately, it has to improve rather rapidly for me to come back to that.
Yeah, I'll be reading that tonight. I'm very curious to have a look at that. I haven't had a chance to catch up with that or another title from Marvel, which you actually have told me about as well this week, which we'll come to in a second.
Yes.
Which are two books that I actually really want to have a look at just to see what they're like, basically.
Yeah. Well, the big issue for Marvel this week, there was about 4 big things that came out for Marvel this week. I'll leave. There's Avengers Extinction 4, which I'll leave just for a moment because I think we have a bit to say about that.
Yeah, I'll come back to that one.
There was Kick-Ass number 7.
Now, actually, I had a look at that. We're going to review that. What is it? April 1st, I think.
It'll be the next issue.
That's a bad date for an episode. Can I
tell yeah, you? No joke. No, it is actually coming out on the 1st of April.
But I will just give you a quick jump in on that, which basically I was left a little bit underwhelmed, and it concluded, but it has the same problem that we're going to come back to with Avengers Extinction. When we do Avengers Extinction and we talk about that, you'll know what I'm talking about. But I felt like Kick-Ass 2 wasn't as rounded, wasn't as complete as the first Kick-Ass.
No.
But we'll leave that for the full review on the 1st of April.
And the other book that I wanted to mention that came out this week was John Carter, Gods of Mars. Now, if you listen to the film, actually, show we know you know that we were all fans of John Carter, the film.
Yep.
And we would have liked to see a sequel, but we know that's not going to happen given that the studio's taken a $200 million loss. But, of course, Disney owning Marvel now can continue the story in comic book form, which is exactly what they've done. And John Carter, Gods of Mars, issue 1, picks up exactly where John Carter, the film, left off.
Oh, cool.
And for those of you who want to see the story going on, get this book. It's a really good book. I recommend it highly. And
I'm a little gun shy about going back to the John Carter comic book world.
I know, because we read that Dynamite one a few weeks ago. But this one's written by Marvel. Put out by its production value is a little bit higher. There's no repeated pages. it's a really solid book, and if you like the movie and you didn't want to, and you're not quite ready to let it go yet, well, this is the book you have to read.
All right, well, I will definitely catch up with it and have a look.
Because we ain't getting a sequel.
No, we ain't getting a sequel. It's not going to happen, people.
All right, so Super Crooks, which I have read. You haven't read that yet, have you, Dave?
No, I haven't, and I really want to because I do like the writer a lot.
Yeah, this is Mark Millar's new book. Much like Kick-Ass, he's actually setting this one up to be a film and comic production simultaneously.
Right.
And he's writing the book and it's coming out, but the whole conceit of it is that it's going to be a film at the end of it. So he's writing it in this very cinematic, he says Guy Ritchie almost style of thing. He's reteamed with Lionel Yu, who he did Superior with.
Right.
I got to say, this is a slick book. The basic premise is that these group of super villains, or super crooks, as the title would imply, have decided, look, we can't actually do anything here in the States because there's superheroes everywhere. We're not going to be able to win it. So let's just go to Spain.
I love that concept.
Because there's no superheroes there.
They just hop on a plane and go. Huh?
and he said, love it, because he said the idea is that if you were a superhero, if you were a supervillain, why would you go to New York? Every superhero is there.
Well, like, exactly. Know. It's sort of one of those wonderful comic book things that you sit there and go, I don't understand why you would keep trying.
And look, ultimately, and this is something we're sure to cover in film news and in film actually as time goes by, but he's teaming up with his old Wanted producer, Mark Platt,
right,
and the Oscar-nominated Spanish director Nacho Vigalondo been brought in to direct the film. So he did a time travel movie called Time Crimes a few years ago.
Oh, did he direct Time Crimes?
Yeah. Oh. So he'll be ultimately doing the film of Super Crooks. So
very interesting indeed. Look, I quite like Mark Millar's work. I find him up and down.
Yep.
And I like some of the stuff that's been adapted from his work. As an example, the comic book of Wanted is completely different to the film.
Oh, yes.
Of Wanted. There is no comparison. In fact, Super Crooks actually sounds almost like a little bit like Wanted, the comic book, in the sense that it's actually focused around the supervillains. Whereas in the movie, of course, they made it about assassins, which was completely different. But I actually think as a writer, he's got some very interesting stuff. The other one that is well worth having a look at is Nemesis, which is the film rights have been sold to that as well. Apparently, Tony Scott owns those, and he wants to turn that into a film. So that's been kicking around Hollywood for a better part of a year now. We heard about Tony Scott taking those rights. So we don't know if it's ever going to happen, but that could – once again, though, Mark Millar actually really likes looking at it from the opposite side, because Nemesis, once again, is about a supervillain.
Yeah. No, he does. And he did the same with Ultimates as well. He kind of just – So
take the dark side.
What was that, sorry?
Take the dark side.
take the dark side. Like, you know, the character of Bruce Banner, the character of Bruce Banner and Hank Pym and that, very much exploring that. So, you know, I'm interested to see where this book goes. I actually think it's got a really strong start, and I it's one of my top picks for the week as
now,
well.
Is it a limited series or an ongoing? Because he seems to like the limited series.
It's a limited series, I think. It is a limited series.
Okay, so
I believe, and let me just grab my copy. I've got the issue right here. I think it's actually one of no, I'm not sure. Sorry, I don't know if it's one of seven. I think it's something around that. I think it's probably going to be about the same length as Kick-Ass.
Right, we'll have a look at it. He likes the like anything between about 4 and 8 issues. So
yeah.
So we'll see where that goes. All right, let's talk about Marvel's resolution to Avengers X Sanction. Now, this has been going for the last 4 months. This was started strong. I mean, the first issue was really good. It was a 4-issue limited series. It was basically Cable taking on the Avengers.
Yes.
Because there was some event in time that he needed to stop. And it was not made quite clear what it was at first. And
had something to do with his daughter, Hope.
And as it went on, it became more and more about Hope, and he had to stop the Avengers. The Avengers were going to do something to Hope, basically, in time. And so he was, and you're never quite sure whether it was because he was being driven mad by the technovirus or whether there was actually a reason. It was all very unclear as the issues were going. It was getting muddier and muddier throughout the 4 issues. And the resolution came out this week, and I have to say that it made me angry.
Yeah, look, because and look, let's say it up front. It's angry because it's basically a 4-issue ad for Avengers versus X-Men, which starts this coming week.
Absolutely. Marvel is doing this more and more often, and I actually really wish they would stop it because it's starting to piss me off. The big event of last year, of course, was Fear Itself. With all the tie-ins and everything else in the 8-issue Fear Itself series. And I actually was okay with Fear Itself for the first couple of issues, and it started to lose me. And I thought, I'm sticking in there because it is a big event. And when I got to the last page of Fear, when I got to the last issue of Fear Itself, it didn't resolve because it said to be continued in Fear Itself, The Fearless, the new 12-issue series. And it's like, so this entire event was just an ad for another series, and now they've done it again with X-Men's with Avengers X-Sanction.
And look, you know, you really didn't need to advertise Avengers versus X-Men. It's everywhere. There are cakes.
Yeah, there are cakes. There are cakes, and so it just really frustrates me that I just invested 4 months of reading this thing to go, okay, and now you can read the rest of it later. And it's like, oh, don't do that to me. You know, yeah. I really, really don't like that. I really don't like it when you just are using it as a marketing ploy for another book, rather than giving me a payoff to this book.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, look, you know, obviously we can't say avoid it because most of you will have picked up the concluding issue by now. You're already 3 issues in.
And you also can't avoid it because I'm sure there are going to be things in X-Men versus Avengers or Avengers versus... Which way is it? Avengers versus X-Men,
which they're doing issue 0 of this week rather than just starting at 1.
Which is another very disturbing trend. Can I tell you? This whole issue 0 thing is starting to drive me crazy. You know what?
Something they used to do in the 90s a lot.
I know.
And this is why I stopped reading comics for about 5 years.
Call it issue 1. It's in issue 1. It's not in issue 0. Unless you're going to give away issue 0 for free or something like that. Like
absolutely. No, this is what a bunch of things studios did this. They gave away issue 0 for free or around, you know, Free Comic Book Day. They put out an issue 0 on Free Comic Book Day, and I think they did this last year with one of the big DC things. They gave out issue 0 for free, and that was the hook to get everybody in for their new ongoing series.
The
it's
bottom
like
line is
that's issue, how you do it. That's what Free Comic Book Day's for.
That's right. And the bottom line is issue 0s are usually a promo. They're usually a promo for what's coming up. I know that the Ultimates had an issue 0, which basically was a lot of the contents of issue 0 was reprinted in a later issue.
Yeah, so basically call Avengers X-Sanction issues 1 through 4 and Avengers versus X-Men 0. Just call that all Avengers X-Men 0. Just the whole thing could be compiled as a 0 issue.
I think they should call Avengers X-Sanction issues 1 to 4, just call that issue 0.
Yeah, exactly. There and then go. Start from issue 1.
There you go. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Now we're talking. Yeah, right. So Avengers X-Sanction, look, I think you need it for some of the material in it, but just be aware that it is just an ad for an upcoming series.
David, should we move on?
We should. I think we need to do a bit of this.
What a scoop!
All right, tell me about my man.
Okay, our man, Alan Moore. He's shuffled out of his cave finally and presented us with about four or five pages. He and Kevin O'Neill have got their new book coming out. It's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Century 2009, which is the third volume of the third volume.
Pardon?
Which is, well, you know, there's been League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. There's been League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Volume 2.
Yeah.
And the third, there was a Black Dossier that came out in between that. And now this is – the third volume has actually been released in three distinct individual sort of prestige format volumes. And there was one set in 1910, one in 1969, and this most recent one is in 2009.
Okay.
Now – As the article that we pulled this from, Bleeding Cool, said, we've got our Jess Nevins on. Jess Nevins has done a series of books sort of annotating all of the references in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Right.
And which unfortunately for fans, have a lot of the books have actually become a cacophony of references that often are so intertextual they don't make any sense by themselves, and it just sort of swamp the story a little bit.
Yeah,
but the artwork here does give us a few hints about the direction of the book and maybe a few things just for fans of sci-fi generally. In the first image that's on this link that's in our show notes, you'll see the Martian ship from League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Volume 2.
Yep.
You'll see a thing on the wall saying Treen's out. Treen's were, of course, the alien race from Venus,
yeah,
that were in the Dan Dare serialized novels of the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And there is there's another image there which has got this very dystopian looking future with these police with glowing red eyes that's almost somewhere between V for Vendetta and Judge Dredd,
Judge Dredd, yeah.
As they point out.
I was noticing on this article, they say that the shields are also, they resemble those from the Norse Fire Party from the V for Vendetta movie. Although I don't think Alan Moore will be paying homage to the V for Vendetta movie somehow.
They look very Masonic to me, those shields. So I don't know if they're just a reference to his own from hell.
Well, that's because of the symbol on them as well.
But there's this recurring double X throughout all of the images that are in here. And you'll see that in the very first image, it's sort of in the dirt on the wall. In the second image, it's on the shields. And then when you get to the third and fourth images, it's graffiti on the wall in the background. And the third and fourth images are actually quite interesting. The Queequeg reference in the third and fourth images on the link in our show notes is actually a double reference. It's, of course, those familiar with Moby Dick will know that it was the cannibalistic harpoonist who was a friend of Call Me Ishmael.
Yeah.
Was a friend of Ishmael's, and we saw Ishmael in the original League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. But apparently, and I've not played them, but it's the name of the coffee chain in Deus Ex, The Invisible War, as well.
See, I haven't played that yet either. I really, really want to play that. So.
And it is actually being shown here as a coffee chain, so maybe it's a double intertextual reference there.
I didn't think Alan Moore would play that game somehow.
Yeah.
I didn't know he had electricity at his cabin.
No. Maybe Kevin O'Neill was like running like a little bicycle up there to pump him so he can run his Xbox. I don't know. It's a mental picture I've got now. That's how I choose to think of Alan Moore. The final page that they've shown here is just filled with references. Like there's this guy walking along City Street in 2009, and there's a poster for Drive Shaft.
Yep.
And if you're a fan of Lost, that was the
band
that Charlie
Monahan
was a member
yep.
of. There's another panel where there's Fur Q in the house. Fur Q was a fictional rapper that was in Chris Morris's Day to Day series in the UK. There was, and apparently he was a fictional rapper who sampled Phil Collins. There was the NWH reference, which is a reference to the fictional band in the parody movie Fear of a Black Hat.
Who,
of course, are
up.
In turn a parody, the name is a parody of NWA.
Yep.
They've also got a reference there to Massive Genius, who was the rapper that became Woodbine played in The Sopranos. So there's a whole lot of different references there. And this article seems to think there's a reference there to Stringer Bell and Slim Charles at the bottom from The Wire. So.
All right. So
look, and that's just four panels from what will be a 70-odd page book.
When does this come out?
This comes out in June.
Oh, I'll be interested to have a see, so see what Alan Moore. I think Moore's
around
doing.
Then we should probably do all three of those together, like the 1910, the 1969, and the 2009 together.
Really, perhaps. Because just doing one of these massive books isn't enough for you.
No, exactly right. Well, maybe we'll just do 2009.
I'm gonna slap you down one day, Richard.
Yeah, my comic stomach is bigger than my comic eyes, I think.
I think so.
Now, look, moving swiftly along because we've got a few things to talk about there. I mentioned really, and I'm just going to mention this really quickly because, and it's just really more of a directional thing. There's a great interview over at IGN.
Yep.
I've forgotten the guy's name. His last name is Miller. Brian Q. Miller.
Oh, Brian Q. Miller.
Who is writing the Smallville season 11. So he's saying that it picks up. He said there was a 7-year time jump where everyone went 7 years into the future in the finale of Smallville season 10. That far in. We're 6 months after Clark became Superman for the first time and pushed Apocalypse out of orbit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if you haven't seen season, was it 10? Yeah, season 10 of Smallville, there's one episode where Clark is shunted to the future, and it's kind of what makes him make the final jump where he starts to realize that it can all work, where in the future he's actually married to Lois, she knows his secret identity, and he is Superman.
Yeah. And, so look, I won't go through too much of that because we're running out of time, but good interview. Go check it out. We've got the link's in the show notes, but it's on IGN. Really good interview.
Mm.
Now, the final comic story I had to include because it's Rob Liefeld, Prophet of Doom. Well, not really. He's actually calling out for help. He's saying that, that in his words, Grifter, Hawkman, and Deathstroke need your help in May. Despite the best efforts of the creative team, sales have fallen off a cliff for these books. In May, we'll provide new jumping points for all four books. And if you're not, and if retailers aren't satisfied with the sales of these books, I think we can move additional copies. If you're not satisfied, take a chance.
All right. Now, as somebody who, as the fact that we're going to talk about the new 52 6 months on in a few minutes, can I just say, no, we don't need to give these books any more support.
No, and in fact, one of Rob's books, Hawk and Dove, is one that didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
Now, when we're talking about these books, Grifter placed 126th in the February charts. Which is 12% of the Batman sales.
Yep.
Deathstroke was 104th place, or 15% of the Batman sales, and Hawkman was 103rd. But now, as this article points out, the book that I think we should be really worried about is Captain Atom. It's the lowest-ranked book at 140 of the top 300 that hasn't been culled yet. All the other DC books that are sitting below that, and we're talking about books like... And I'm just pulling up the chart here. We're talking about books like OMAC, which was at number 150.
Yep.
Static Shock was 160. Mr. Terrific, our favorite book, was 164. Men of War was 167. And Black Hawks was way down there at 172.
Yeah, it does. You know, it could have something to do with the fact that these books aren't very interesting.
No, and I think that's that's partly it. And I think, you know, because they move away from our traditional concept of capes. And I think one thing that the movies have done in the last few years is make capes interesting again.
Yeah.
People actually want to engage with that. Now, sorry to cut off any discussion there, but I think we should move rapidly into movie news.
Okay.
Because we have a lot to cover in the pick this week.
Yeah, we do. Here we go.
Okay, right. Very, very quickly. This is a story we've covered before. Warner Brothers has set a date for the 300 sequel, which is called Battle of Artemisia, which is apparently rumored to be getting a new title soon.
You can't make things that people can't pronounce.
Exactly. So this was reported over at Superhero Hype. The date is now set for August the 2nd, 2013, so we've got just over a year to wait for that. It's going to be directed by Noam Murrow, who I'm not quite sure what else he's done, but the film is going head-to-head against Smurfs 2 and Red 2.
Oh, well, Red 2 I'm looking forward to. Smurfs 2 I'm not so sure about. What's the bet? I'm going to put money down and say it's going to be called 302.
I'd love to think it was 302.
Or another
like they did with 101 and then 102 Dalmatians. Okay.
Or like Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, Ocean's 12, 13.
Ocean's 13. 301, 302.
301, you watch. Or another 300.
and get who was the guy that did another 48 hours?
Walter Hill.
Walter Hill, get Walter Hill in to do
Zack
Snyder's 300. Anyway, I'm not sure what else Noam Murrow's done. If only I had some sort of vast computerized network to look, it up.
Look stuff up on.
He's also done, Internet Movie Database refuses to load his profile. Here we go. He's done, he did Smart People, 2008.
Oh, wait a minute. Why does that ring a bell? Why does that ring a bell?
That had. Again, Dennis Quaid, Sarah Jessica Parker, Thomas Hayden Church, and Ellen Page in it.
I never saw it.
And it was the life of a widowed professor who comes a new love and unexpected visit from his adopted brother.
Well, that sounds thrilling, doesn't it?
And the tagline was, "Sometimes the smartest people have the most to learn."
Uh-huh. It sounds a little bit like that, Albert Einstein movie, IQ. Do you remember that?
Yes. Oh, that was
yeah.
Not to be confused with Young Einstein, the Australian film,
which was also.
Now, one final little bit of news. There's a bunch of TV news I didn't include this week because I cut it short for time. But a whole lot of new animated series are coming up. There's a Young Justice season 2, which looks awesome. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of these new little interstitials that they're doing all over on the Cartoon Network in the States. They're playing. In between things like Green Lantern, which has also got a trailer for the new stuff coming out, and
there's also a new Spider-Man series that Nicholas is very excited about.
Ultimate Spider-Man looks amazing as well. Ultimate Spider-Man basically pitches Spider-Man as having joined the Avengers, been recruited by Nick Fury, who's training him to be the most ultimate Spider-Man he can be,
and giving him lots of high tech.
Yeah. So it kind of looks like a different take. So I kind of like where they're going.
I was watching the trailer for that the other day. It actually looks more comedic as well.
It does. He's a piece of toast at one point. So the trailer that I'm going to play today is actually not from any of those things. It's from Avengers Season 2, Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And given how big Avengers is going to be over this American summer, I think this series is very well timed. And from this little sound clip, I think it's going to be a huge season. Let me just play this.
Avengers, assemble!
The Avengers are back. Things got crazy, but we pretty much saved all of reality.
The world needs the Avengers to keep the world safe.
I am Thor, son of Odin and prince of this realm called Asgard.
Talk too much. Time to smash.
Try and stay alive. This is never good.
We're still tracking down the Masters of Evil, but we pretty much saved the universe.
Such arrogance.
Yeah! Destroy them all!
The Kree Empire is 100,000 star systems strong. Earth will be crushed.
That's not gonna happen.
Avengers, Earth. In your hands.
Now that sounds kind of cool.
Can I just say that my son Nicholas and I were both actually very large fans of the first Earth's Mightiest Heroes Avengers series. It's actually really good. It's kind of simplified Avengers, but it's got some really good stuff in it. And when Hulk comes out and starts smashing, I think we almost stood up and cheered at one point.
Can I just say one thing then that'll get you very excited about the second season?
Yeah.
Two words, Red Hulk.
All right. Love me some Red Hulk.
So that's movie news for the week. Let's plenty to go on. Now, David, do we have any feedback this week at all?
I don't have any feedback on this side of things. How about you?
No feedback at all, in which case I think it's time to move on for the pick of the week.
Here we go.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It certainly is. All right, so this week we're doing something a little bit different. Instead of actually doing one book or series of books, we're actually kind of going back and revisiting exactly where we started from.
So we're going and doing 312 books this week.
Absolutely.
Because we didn't have another. Last week we did 40 issues, so we thought this week we'd do 312.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we like to do things in great huge chunks of information. Mm. No, that's not exactly what we're doing.
No. We started this series with the concept of the New 52 was out, and we wanted to talk about this new big thing that had happened in comics, and so we started a podcast called Behind the Panels, and you're listening to it now. So
we hope.
We thought, here we are, 6 months on. We've just done these two big books, but we're still reading regular weeklies. We want to go back and have a look and see where the New 52 is up to now. So yeah, look, we thought we'd take a big sort of big picture look back at all the books that have come out.
So we're calling this our semi-annual.
Yeah, it's our semi-annual bumper-sized issue. If this was a comic, it'd be one of those 100-page ones.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So we to deal with the sheer number of books here, and we're not going to be going into detail on every single book, and so don't panic about that. What we're doing is kind of taking
issue one, Justice League.
We're taking stock of where it's gotten to and what's working, what's not working, basically what we're dropping at this point, what we think still has potential, where things could go in the future, and we're going to group this by how we're going to group this. This is just too much.
We'll do this by family. So when they started this, they had this in a set of a bunch of different families. So they had Justice League.
Yep.
And we'll go through those titles individually. There's the Batman books. There's the Superman books. There's the Green Lantern books. The Young Justice books. The Edge. The Dark. And the DC Universe Presents plus the miniseries.
Right. Okay. And I think the
miniseries. And of course, you'll know that there's the second wave that's coming out soon, but we'll talk about the ones that have been dropped as well.
Yeah, exactly. And we haven't read the second wave yet, and we've talked about that.
It's not out yet. It is.
Exactly. So we can't really go into what's going to happen in the future too much, but we can look at what's in front of us right now and kind of give our predictions as well, because there's definitely some titles here that will probably not make the cut. As time goes by. All right, let's start with Justice League, because that
Justice League. Then, well, let's start with Justice League, which is the Justice League book. In that, easily the tentpole and must read of the series.
Absolutely, and we knew it was going to be. This was going to be the make or break book of this entire reboot, because if Justice League didn't work, nothing else was going to follow suit, basically. So, and they launched the entire New 52 with issue one of Justice League.
That's right.
And so they knew that this was going to be the strongest of the lot. Has it held up though, Richard?
Look, as we said at the top of the show, yes, and it's all just starting to come together now. Mm. As you put it quite nicely, I think, as this dysfunctional family.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the fact that they're not all perfect, and they have from issue one they actually had this established with the fact that Green Lantern is basically an egotist, Flash is kind of scatty in what he's doing, and he never takes anything too seriously. Batman takes everything too seriously. Wonder Woman basically is still coming to terms with the fact that she's not really of man's world, and still is trying to find her feet in that world. Superman still isn't even really of this man's world at this point, and is still trying to find his way as well. So I think it's really interesting that we've got this group of people who haven't even really solidified themselves yet, but are yet working as a team. And I think probably the one character, and this is going to sound really odd, but the one character who is probably the most confident in himself is probably Aquaman.
Yeah, well, we may as well take it, because this is in the same series here. Let's talk about the book Aquaman,
which was the biggest surprise.
Also written by Geoff Johns.
Absolutely. And this is the book that issue number one was the number one biggest surprise of the entire New 52, I think.
Let's put it this way. This is such a big surprise that Aquaman last month outsold every Marvel book.
We covered that in news, and that was amazing. Amazing that happened. Amazing.
So look, we're really impressed with this. And while it hasn't maintained the same momentum from the start of that series, it's still a strong book, and it's given us a new respect for the character.
Yeah, although I got to say, that was it issue 5 or 6 where he's in the desert?
Yeah.
Really like that issue.
No, really good stuff.
Yeah.
Let's whip through some of these other ones. Justice League International, very confused book.
It's confused. I stick with it because I like some of the characters. I like the dynamic of the fact that they all infight and everything all the way through it. I think the story is as confused as the book is. And I think
it's very old school. It's very, because it's Dan Jurgens wrote it, and it's very like mid-90s DC.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a really great moment in Justice League number 7, actually, that's just come out, where Batman, who has been a regular on Justice League International, kind of guiding them into being a team, he suddenly turns around to Steve Trevor and just says, yeah, get rid of them. They're useless.
Like, it's clearly not working just yet. I love that. I love that Batman moment. It's
yeah,
so good.
So it's fantastic. So yeah, I think Justice League International is a book that has potential. I think it's just, it's still trying to figure out what it wants to do. Do you know what my other problem is? It doesn't have, its characters aren't quite compelling enough yet. It's like you've got all the A hitters in Justice League, and with the exception of the guest starring Batman, none of the characters in Justice League are strong enough in themselves. Justice League International, that is, are strong enough in themselves to carry the book. You need one really big heavy hitter like Batman to be like the core of that of that team, and they haven't quite got that yet. I'm thinking that's coming.
Yeah. Now, Wonder Woman and Mr. Terrific, we kind of covered in the what we've been reading.
We did.
And what we think of that. So we won't go into much more detail.
Although,
here.
No, wait. We did say in the news we would come back to Mr. Terrific, though. Wonder Woman we covered. I just want to just really briefly touch on Mr. Terrific.
Oh, yes, actually, there's a few things we want to touch on. Now, Mr. Terrific is one of the issues that we cancelled as of the second wave, with issue 8 being its last issue.
Yeah.
So, and there's reason. And for good reason.
Yeah.
Now, there's two things we want to put out. The first one I'll mention quickly. Because we both picked up on the second example. The first example was, and I think this is from about issue 3. One of the things I don't like about Mr. Terrific is that he's meant to be the third smartest man in the world, keeps giving us reasons to remind us that he's the third smartest man in the world, and also that he seems to actually think every word that he's going to say or do or whatever. He comes off more as, you know, autistic than he does brilliant. For example, this is in issue 3. Forget the fact that you're invisible to machines in all forms of electronic surveillance. The low-level electromagnetic field created around me at all times by the T-spheres takes care of that. Who nearly beat a man to death. Now, this is one of the things that I hate about comics. Comics that actually have to remind you every couple of pages what the powers and history of that person is.
Yeah.
To me, if they have to do that, the character hasn't taken hold.
Absolutely. And I find that with Mr. Terrific constantly, this over-exposition of everything that he does. I actually have another example of that here, actually, where he's fighting a guy in the snow. We were talking about this just before the show, and they're basically, you know, kicking the snot out of each other. And his internal dialogue during this, I mean, the three panels, this is just three panels where they're kicking the snot out of each other, and his internal dialogue is, yep, definitely a few broken ribs. Nola, the T-Sanctuary's artificial intelligence and resident medic, is going to have its work cut out for it when I get back. From what I can determine, the Tomorrow Thief's power must be derived from the ability to control molecular bonds. That's why he can make himself permeable, but also adhere to metal surfaces. He's literally able to disrupt or bond his own molecules with anything on an atomic level. I'm cutting it short. It goes on.
And what the hell's a T-sphere? I still don't know. They explain everything else, but I still don't know what the T-sphere is.
I love the
do.
Fact that he loses his T-spheres.
T-spheres, like every 5 minutes. I mean, your whole thing is your T-spheres.
And I was about to say, in issue 5, he loses them, and he goes, maybe I can use the power of the T-mask. What?
I think this dude's being T-bagged, but anyway.
Oh, now we have to talk very, very briefly about the other reason we hate this character.
It takes a very odd turn around issue 6. Suddenly, this book gets a little bit stereotypical by issue 6 because he's gathered together all these prisoners, and after this extended thing about slavery, he says, "Question." He's facing down the captors, and he's like, "Question: what's scarier than a black man with an alien posse?" Answer, an angry black man with an alien posse.
All I can say to that is, ugh.
Yeah, it made me throw up a little in my mouth.
It did. It's just, it's really, really, I find the entire book pretentious. Yeah. I think that's the word you use. I find the character pretentious. I find the entire concept of the book pretentious. And I just feel like it was this weird attempt at DC to take some minor character from the background and give him his full book. And the problem was that the character just isn't interesting.
No.
And they keep trying to give him this dark background. He keeps talking about his dark core and all this. So sit there and go, you're the third richest man on the planet. You're the third most intelligent man on the planet. You're one of the richest men on the planet. You're a genius. You run your own company. You've got superpowers. You've got a super physique. What exactly are you dark about? You know, it's like I'm trying to figure out, because they never actually talk about what it is. It's just like,
because he keeps losing his T-spheres. That's got it great eventually, you know. Okay.
So yes, Mr. Terrific, you will not be missed. All right.
The Flash.
I like it. I gotta say, I've been enjoying it a lot. It's one of the fluffier books, but yeah, I actually. Well, he's always been one of the fluffier books.
You need a fluffy book.
You do, and he's a very fluffy character. He's DC's Spider-Man. What can I tell you?
He is. He really is. And I like this. I like the balance they've got between his cop life and his superhero life that they've got going in here. And I've always liked that about the character. Mm. And I think they've made him in this series too. One of the things, the jokes I always make is like, so the Flash, what are your powers? I run really fast, and well, I run particularly fast, and. Did I mention that I run fast? They actually address that in this book and actually give him a whole lot of things and really emphasize the fact that, you know, he can vibrate between, you know, dimensions.
And I love the fact that they're actually playing with that idea that the force power, and it's one of the things that they've actually developed in The Flash over the last many years. It's not just running fast. There is like this force power in the universe that he's tapped into. And I kind of this speed power, I should say, the speed force. And I like the fact that he's now discovering that he can actually apply that to his brain.
Yeah, and they've also just and that he can actually see everything's a little bit before it happens.
That's
because
right.
He's working so quickly. And I also like in the very final issue they brought back one of his big supervillains, which was Captain Cold.
And they made him even more lethal, which I kind of like as well. They've changed. He doesn't just have the dorky little pistols anymore. You know,
no, exactly. So for me, this is kind of like Aquaman. It's kind of like a character that I'd written off, but they've taken it up a notch. And I'm going, yeah, no, respect.
And you know why? I think a lot of this has got to do with Flashpoint. Just prior to the 52 launch, they actually built on his character with Flashpoint, and I think that they kind of built on the mythology on Flash a little bit with Flashpoint and have made him more interesting.
Mm. Now, from Captain Cold to Captain Atom, the lowest ranked DC book, lowest selling DC book that hasn't been cancelled yet.
And I'm actually kind of sad about this, actually, because now I got to say before I must justify that comment and say it's not actually a great book, okay? But it started very interesting, and I actually read the first three issues thinking this is actually kind of an interesting book. I like the fact that he's isolated. I like the fact that nobody trusts him. I like the fact that there's a real mythology happening here to this character where you sit there and go, he is a victim of circumstance with his powers, and I kind of like that. I kind of like the fact that he's kind of trapped in a lab when he's not out flying around, and when something happens, people immediately point at him and say, oh, probably his fault. You know what I mean? like that, but I think they kind of lost their way.
I agree, and because it was a book that actually intrigued me to start with, lost me in the middle, and it's starting to get back on track now. But
I need to go and catch up with the later issues.
Particularly, there was an issue where he accidentally fried this woman he quite likes. He accidentally fried her hand, but then not long afterwards, he was able to reform her hand and sort of discover something new about his powers. So I think what I like about these books is that they're still in a process of self-discovery. So hopefully that will continue. Unfortunately, it's not ranking very well at the moment, so it may not last beyond the next culling.
I'm hoping they take the character and do something with him, though. Maybe put him in Justice League International or something
I think maybe he's the heavy hitter that Justice League International needs. But,
maybe.
I don't know. But anyway, two more books left in this – sorry, three more books left in this area. Fury of Firestorm made – very little impression on me.
Actually, used to love the Firestorm character back in the 80s when he first came around. I remember when Firestorm first started, and I thought it was a really interesting idea when it was just the kid and the old guy in his head, basically, and the formation of Firestorm.
Yeah.
I really liked that. I really liked, you know, how he was the jock, and then he had the scientist in his head, and then he kind of became part of Justice League, and there was a real growth to that character. The way he's been reinvented for the New 52, absolute snoozer.
Yeah, no, look, I'm surprised it's lasted this long.
Me too. And the fact that there's more than one of them, and the fact that it's just the whole thing just doesn't work for me. It's a real messy book, and I stuck with it for about four issues, and this couldn't go any further.
Now, Savage Hawkman is not one that I've kept with a lot. But how are you finding it?
I actually really enjoyed I actually really didn't think I was going to enjoy it, cuz Hawkman is one of those really dorky characters who worked well as a sub-character in Justice League, and same with Hawk Girl, but I don't think we're ever strong enough to carry their own book. I thought the reinvention of Hawkman for this, where they actually made the nth metal was actually embedded in him, so he kind of formed into Hawkman, and he was kind of bitter, so they were kind of making him a darker character, and I kind of like this. I thought, this has potential. Problem I had with it was I didn't like the art style.
That's Philip Tan's doing the art.
Yeah, and I wasn't real impressed with the art style. And then it kind of got into this whole strange subplot about this shape-shifting alien and blah. And it, once again, it became so messy and muddled that I just kind of lost interest in it.
I don't mind the art, but I'm with you on the story. It's a little bit messy. Okay, well, the final book is one that's very close to my heart, of course, is Green Arrow.
Ooh, of course.
And as regular listeners will know, it's my favorite character, and I will follow him till the ends of the earth. But I didn't get into the first couple of issues, mainly probably because I was still grieving for the loss of the old Green Arrow, that he wasn't there anymore. Now, by the end of J.T. Kroll's initial run, I was starting to really enjoy it, and I was starting to like where he was taking the character and where he was building it, but it seems as though not enough people were digging that thing, and they've changed writers six issues in,
right,
to Ann Nocenti, who's taken it in a very different direction, a very comic, very sexy kind of angle. In the first issue, he has a foursome.
With three very hot redheads, but
three very hot women in the first issue, yeah, and he acknowledges that fact and kind of just says, well, you know, you really didn't have to poison me to get me to sleep with you. I would have gone willingly, so I'm not quite sure where that's going yet. But now finally, I think he is a character coming into his own.
Interestingly enough, I actually a few mini issues ago we actually talked about this, where I said I'm actually starting to dig Green Arrow. I actually started to like him probably about the third or fourth issue. I started to kind of finally get the swing of the book, and I started to actually get into the vibe of what was going on. And I thought issue six was actually a really good issue. And I actually didn't like issue seven. Issue five was really good, and then issue six, I can't remember where we're up to. Anyway, the end of that first arc, basically, where the ends, we talked about it before, where it ends with him saying there are other superheroes, I thought was a really good book.
Yeah.
The issue with the redheads, this first issue of this new arc, I think it took a huge step backwards for me.
Yeah, no, and I agree, and I was looking forward to where they were going to take J.T. Kroll's run, but again, again, it's a book I'm going to stick with regardless.
So. The last time this happened for me when you changed a team, like this, where it had a really massive effect on the book, was actually the last series of Power Girl before the 52 launch, because the first 13 issues were fantastic of that series, and I was just in love with this book. And then it came up with an issue saying, oh, new team, and I went, oh, okay, very interesting. And it actually lost me completely. And it was like the art style was different, the writing style was different, everything about it was different. I stuck with it, though, and it was about four or five issues I kind of got back into the swing of the book, but it was like having to rediscover a book again, and I actually don't like that. I really hate it when they do that to me.
Particularly for me in this one, because I've just rediscovered a character that I have known for the better part of the last decade.
Exactly. It's like, stop changing
things. Now I have
to
rediscover him again.
Yeah. All right.
Now, I think that's it for Justice League. So
that's the Justice Family?
That's the Justice League Family. Now,
you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Because if you have, chances are you've met Batman.
And so now we're talking about Batman. We should be going for about another 3 hours. Is that right?
Yeah. And I'll quickly run through these. The titles in the Batman family are Batman, Detective Comics, Batwing, Batman the Dark Knight, Batman and Robin, Batgirl, Batwoman, Nightwing, Catwoman, Birds of Prey, and Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Good Lord.
There's a lot of books. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 books in the Bat family. Soon to be 12 with the introduction of Batman Incorporated.
And I actually think they could actually not make it 12, because they could actually drop a couple of these books.
Now, they could have dropped, and I'm just going to say up front, because I don't want to spend too much time on these ones, but I think Batwing could go.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think that they need – I don't mind – now, I know you don't like this one, but I don't mind Batman the Dark Knight. Sorry, I don't mind Batman and Robin too much.
Batman and Robin I could live without, but that's
But
right.
I don't think you need it. It's not a book you need.
Yeah, okay.
Could explore that same relationship with Robin in one of the other three books.
I was about to say, I don't understand why Robin isn't just in one of the other books.
Yeah.
They actually mentioned –
he doesn't seem to actually be turning up in Batman and Detective Comics or The Dark Knight.
No, but they do make reference to him, because there's actually one point, I think it's in Batman, where Batman says to Alfred, keep Robin out of this. So he is around, they just don't ever have him in the books. And I think he didn't need his own book. He could have just been in these books.
Yeah. So, but far and away, far and away, Batman is the strongest. It's the book called Batman is the strongest book of this series.
The Court of the Owl series that has been going right now with the Batman book is the strongest storyline of all the Bat books, and it is fantastic.
Scott Snyder is doing amazing work on it.
Absolutely.
So, and it's been, as we said at the top of the show, that latest issue is the last three issues have all been the three must-reads of 2012.
Yeah, I agree. They're fantastic stuff. The Court of the Owl stuff is just brilliant.
The Detective Comics, very dark, but good.
I like Detective Comics. I've been enjoying where it's going. This is the one that's been having Penguin in it at the moment. Is that right?
Yeah.
I've been enjoying this. This is old fashioned Batman. This is where he's out there doing stuff, like the going out and just being a detective, basically.
And so it should be, because it's the oldest one of the oldest DC books.
Mm. And I think they've actually continued that on quite nicely. So I'm happy with Detective Comics.
Mm. Batwing, pointless.
Pointless, absolutely pointless. Don't even know why they wrote it. Get rid of it.
Mm. Batman the Dark Knight is not making an impression on me as a separate book, but I don't mind it when I read it.
I find it intriguing.
Mm.
I found some of the storylines in it intriguing. I think the entire thing about this is the one with the White Rabbit, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, the whole White Rabbit character I'm finding kind of interesting. So, I'm intrigued.
Yeah,
so it's not the strongest of the books, but I'm intrigued.
Exactly right. Now, Batman and Robin, we've already spoken about. Batgirl.
Yep. For me, second strongest of the Bat line.
Agreed. Look, Gail Simone, always a great writer. She did Birds of Prey before the current run.
Yep.
And she knows how to write this character. She wrote her for years as Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows exactly the psychology of this character and what she would be going through coming back to the Batgirl.
Yeah, I've got to say up front, this is outside of the families. It seems to me that the women have fared a lot better than the men in the New 52.
Oh, I think so, and I think very consciously so. Despite all the complaints up front about the over-sexualization of women, which is true, the strongest characters in the New 52 have been the female characters.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Batgirl has been just an absolutely bumper book.
But then there's Batwoman.
Not one of my favorites. We've talked about this before, but that's actually not a New 52 issue. She's never been one of my favorites.
No. Look, the art I love, but the story is starting to annoy me.
Yeah. See, I've never been a big fan of the art style either. So it's been a book that's just never really grabbed me.
Nightwing we've spoken about as well. I'm loving this book.
Yeah, Nightwing is it was a bit up and down when it first started with the whole traveling circus thing, but I think it's actually developed into a really interesting story.
It needed that, though, to establish exactly where Dick Grayson was going.
It did, and there's been some really good crossovers. The crossover with Batgirl is great. Yeah. Is great.
And the current crossover with Batman's even better.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Catwoman. Now, we spoke about this at the top. I'm still liking it. Yep. Despite the fact that I have a few issues with it, I think, as you said, they've written her as a really good fragile character.
Yeah, I think she's this fragile character with this exterior of steel, basically. She doesn't let anybody get to her on the surface, but you can see. And I think a lot of this is the art style. She's got those big expressive eyes, and we really get to feel, we can actually feel what's going on in this character. And even the fact that the relationship with her and Batman is actually really strained at the moment as well, I think it's a very interesting book. I find it a really interesting book to read. I'm never quite sure where it's going. Put it that
way. I like Judd Winnick's stuff for the most part, so although he is writing Batwing.
Yeah, well, nobody's perfect.
Mm. Birds of Prey. Now, I have been reading Birds of Prey since the original specials, which must be a good 12 years now that it's been around for. I love these characters, and I love this new team, and I really like where they've ended up taking this, because it's a different lineup from the old Birds of Prey, except for Black Canary.
Yep.
And there's a few of the characters who used to be in there. And this is one of the ones that didn't seem to bother with a reboot. They just, in fact, I don't think any of the Bat family bothered with a reboot. They just kind of continued their stories.
Yeah, pretty much.
I really, really, really like this book. And the last couple of issues have just been going from strength to strength. As you said, all the female characters have been written really well.
Although I've got to say, I miss Lady Blackhawk.
I miss Lady Blackhawk, and the Lady Blackhawk that they've got in Black Hawks isn't great.
Well, she's not the same character.
She's not the same character. They've got her as someone who was born, in the modern age, rather than a woman out of time, which is what I really liked about the old Lady Blackhawk.
Yeah, no, I really like the old Lady Blackhawk, and I do miss her. So
yeah, again, but who knows? That might turn up in Earth 2.
That's true. That's true.
Red Hood and the Outlaws.
This was a new, as they would say in the video game business, a new IPO. A new IP, sorry. This was actually a new book, and I actually really, really liked it when it first started. Kind of sagged in the middle, but I think it's actually coming back now.
Yeah, agreed. And I like the characters because, again, it's got this is one of the ones that has undergone some reboot because it's got Red Arrow in it, who was originally Arsenal and before that Speedy, and he did lose his arm under the old universe,
back,
and so he seems to have both arms now and has a slightly different origin story. And I They haven't really made any connection with Green Arrow at all so far.
No, and they've also completely rewritten the Starfire character, who has a very long DC history. And they've actually completely rewritten her. I still like her. I think what was interesting was that when they first started, she was a source of amusement because they completely rewrote the character. But she's actually starting to come back into her own now.
Now, that's it for the Bat books. Deep breath. okay. Now, the next couple of ones have only got a few books each. Superman has only got four books in the series. There's Action Comics, Superboy. Action Comics, Superman, Superboy, and Supergirl, and Crypto the Wonder Dog. No,
I wish there was a Crypto the Wonder Dog. Can you believe that there's only four super books and yet so many Batman books?
I mean, it's ridiculous. And Superman is far more the iconic character in terms of what the world is known for years. But of course, Batman is very popular on the big screen at the moment, so they have to capitalize on that. Action Comics is probably the other tentpole book of the DCU.
Yeah, well, I think when you look at the DCU, you're really the three books that are really like the tentpoles that hold this whole circus up would be Justice League, Action Comics, Detective Comics.
Agreed. And Action Comics is being written by the incomparable Grant Morrison.
The man who just keeps reinventing things, doesn't he?
Oh, he does. And look, you know, I mean, with the first issue, you've got Superman in a T-shirt and a battered cape. and then, like, you know, a couple of issues in, you've got time travel and the actual Superman who's close to the one we know telling him, son, things are going to be okay, and you know, and all this stuff. So you've really got the founding. And I think by issue 7, which is coming out next in this month sometime. I think it's next week,
I think it's next week, actually, yeah.
Apparently we're going to have the major turning points for this book as well.
Well, he just got the costume, so this is a big factor.
Yeah, so Superman, also a good book. It's set in a different time zone to Action Comics, so we don't have two Superman books that are actually replicating.
So Action Comics is 10 years earlier, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Was it 5 years earlier?
I can't remember now. Anyway.
It's something. It's earlier.
It's the beginning of his career, where Superman is the now of his career.
Mm.
Yeah.
They said, and as they say here in this entry that I'm looking at here, the storylines have all emphasized Superman's alien nature and how it isolates him from humanity. Mm. So, and I think that's true. Also, I think it's interesting that his adoptive parents have died.
Yeah, it's true. They do. Yeah. That's a change. It's a change in the mythos of Superman, because they were like his guiding light.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think that very much changes who he becomes. That's why he's such an outcast when he's introduced, rather than instantly being welcomed by the people of Metropolis. He's actually treated with suspicion.
Yeah. Yeah,
because he is a very different person, and he doesn't know how to deal with it. No. Superboy is completely. It's kind of taking elements from the old DCU in that he's a clone.
Yep.
But they've mashed it together with this awesome little story they've got going with Teen Titans as well, and to a lesser extent, Static Shock and Legion.
We should stress that this is not, for those who are coming in old school DC, this is not Superboy as in Superman when he was a kid. This is a completely different character. And this was, I was not familiar with the Superboy character, well, not very familiar with the Superboy character until the New 52, but he was around in the old DCU, wasn't he? This telekinesis boy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. But look, it's an excellent book.
Yeah, and it started rocky. Let's be very honest. The first few issues were like, do we really know what we're doing here? And I almost felt like they were taking a cue from Flashpoint once again with the Project Superman books, where they had him buried in a cellar and all this. It was very strange books, but that kind of, with the whole, you know, being in a lab and all this sort of stuff, I kind of felt like they were taking a cue from that. But then it's developed into its own book really nicely. And I think that the biggest strength of this book is this whole him trying to discover his humanity.
Mm. Now, with Supergirl, is we've already said this is one of our favorite books, and it's written by Michael Green, who, don't hold it against him, co-wrote the Green Lantern movie. but so did Greg Berlanti and Mark Guggenheim, and they're doing awesome stuff. He also was one of the producers and writers on Everwood, Smallville, and Heroes.
Right.
So he's got a bit of a background there, and he's also written things like Batman Confidential and Superman Batman. Under the old DCU.
Yep.
This is, as we said, this is an excellent book, and the fact that it is really taking its time. She's issue 7 and she still doesn't speak English and she still hasn't fully, you know, integrated with the rest of the DCU yet. It's she's finding her own identity and they're making it distinct from Superman.
And she doesn't feel like the cash-in. Supergirl always had this feeling of the cash-in spin-off.
With Superman with breasts.
That's exactly right. They wanted a Superman character the young girls could appreciate, right? And so, and if you watch the Supergirl movie, they turned it into a fantasy thing with witches and, you know, she was pretty girls and romance. And the whole thing has always been aimed very much at trying to get the girl audience. That doesn't feel like that anymore. This character feels like she's got enough of her own character to basically stand alone. And I really like that. I really like the character. I really like the fact that they've made her this really strong, independent character. And yeah, she has breasts and she's very attractive, but that's not the strength of this book.
You could take the S off her chest and make it still a great comic book without it being connected to Krypton.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's really, really strong.
Now, the Green Lantern series is the family. The Green Lantern family's also got 4 books in it, and it's not a reboot. It's actually just completely follows on from the old DCU.
Yep.
It builds on the sort of aftermath of that War of the Green Lantern series that they were building up.
Yeah, and it's really a mixed bag at this point.
Look, there are 4 books, Green Lantern, Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern New Guardians, and the Red Lanterns. Now, Green Lantern, the main book, also by Geoff Johns.
The man never sleeps.
The thing is, this is about the 3rd must-read book of his that we're talking about because it's the man doesn't sleep, but he writes a good book when he's awake. Green Lantern is actually basically teamed up Sinestro and Hal Jordan for most of this series.
Well, and it's a forced team up because
Sinestro, Green Lantern doesn't have his own power anymore.
And Sinestro has made him a ring with his own ring and basically said, "You now must be my bitch," basically.
I was about to say he's made him Green Lantern. He's made him his bitch, but I thought, I don't know if we can say that on this show.
Of course
we
can.
That's exactly what it is. He's basically Sinestro's bitch at this point.
Now, the latest issue has an interesting turn in it, which is that Carol Danvers has put on her ring again. And so she's Star Sapphire.
Star Sapphire, that's right. It's part of the Indigo tribe.
Yeah, so she's back up and running again because she's a. I think we're going to find that she's gone off to basically save Hal because her and Hal have reformed their relationship.
Hal's trying to be good and not be Green Lantern for her.
He can't be either. I mean, he can't be a real Green Lantern, and he doesn't want this Sinestro one anymore, but he can't seem to get out of this. It's an interesting book. I think it's a bit weaker than where Green Lantern had left us off.
It started out really well, though.
It did. It started off amazingly well, and at the moment, I think it's kind of a little bit wishy-washy, but it's still an important read, and I think it's going places. We've got the Guardians in the background basically plotting the downfall of all of the Lanterns.
They're saying that they've had enough of that it's a failed experiment. It's time we move on to whatever the next
one
is.
So I think we're and this, of course, leads us to New Guardians, which...
Which is 5 different, is it 5 or 6? I can't remember how many different colors there are. All the different colored lanterns, is one from each kind of teaming up reluctantly.
And this is the Rainer lantern.
That's right. So it's basically Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern, Kilo from the Sinestro Corps, Belize from the Red Lantern Corps, the Red Lantern Corps. Yeah.
Belize is, isn't he orange? No, that's
Glomulus is the orange one.
No, orange is Lafleeze is who I'm thinking of. It's the
Lafleeze is the main
it's orange. But
it's not Lafleeze that's joined the crew. It's actually this construct Lafleeze has made called Glomulus.
Yeah, we must explain that Lafleeze of the Orange Corps, which is of course, is it Amaris?
That's a good one.
The orange is.
Avarice. He's just sitting. Most time they cut back to him and he's just eating.
It's avarice. Sorry, it's avarice. He won't share the lantern with anybody else.
So rather than actually creating an orange lantern core, he's actually just created this construct who's slowly becoming sentient. He's a great character.
He is. And all orange lanterns you ever see are just constructs. From Lafleeze because he refuses to share the lantern. It's very. He's a funny
I have
character.
A feeling he's going to go, and I'm going to cry for the rest of the day.
He's a very funny character, Lafleeze. One of my favorites of the old DC universe was where he found himself in Las Vegas.
Right, that's right.
And it was like, what is this place? I want it.
And also, there's also Monk from the Indigo Tribe, Saint Walker from the Blue Lantern Corps, and Fatality from the Star Sapphires. it's interesting. Yeah, so before I was wrong. Carol is not Indigo Tribe. She's from the Star Sapphires.
She's a Star Sapphire. That's right.
Yeah, and it's a patchy book.
New Guardians is very patchy. It has yet to really grab me. I read it, but it's yet to really grab me.
I did like the last issue. I quite enjoyed it, but again, yet to grab me. Green Lantern Corps. This is the other two human Green Lanterns. This is John Stewart and Guy Gardner.
Yep.
And the rest and a bunch of other Green Lantern people. They're going off on their own missions. Again, it's sort of tying into the idea that the Guardians have actually fired Kyle Rayner in his book. So they're probably the only two officially sanctioned Green Lanterns of Earth left.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, the Lantern Corps at the moment is a mess.
Yeah, and in the latest issue actually has John Stewart taking – no, the second most recent issue has John Stewart taking a fairly extreme measure to stop one of the Green Lanterns from betraying the Corps. Have you kept up with this one?
No, I haven't read this one yet.
So. Because it's the second most recent issue, I won't mind spoiling it. He actually snaps the neck of one of the other Green Lanterns.
Holy dooly.
Because he's about to reveal the secrets to Oa. Because they were all being tortured and he broke. And so John Stewart broke his neck to stop him from doing that. There's one other Green Lantern there and he hasn't told anybody. And John Stewart's carrying around the secret that he's done this in order to preserve, one, the legacy of this other lantern, but also I think there's a little bit of, well, I've killed somebody. What happens now?
Oh my God! Yeah, I'm gonna have to go catch up with the Lantern Corps. Corps was a very patchy book to start with.
Yeah. Now Red Lanterns.
Red Lanterns is one I've actually quite enjoyed. It's I don't think it's quite as solid now as it was in its first probably five, six issues. Four or five issues, I should say. But basically, Red Lanterns were introduced to the world with the Lantern Wars back in the prior to the 52, and Atrocicus and his Red Lanterns, which are all the Lanterns of Rage, and I really quite enjoyed the characters, and to see that they actually generated their own book was actually a very interesting move, and I actually really liked the storyline where Atrocicus was questioning whether Rage was enough. A lot throughout the first few issues, and you know, the waking up of his lanterns, who he keeps in like this dog-like savage state basically all the time, and waking them up to become to be able to talk to, because he's trying to figure these things out, and then then completely being paranoid that they're going to turn on
him. Against him.
Which I think it's a fascinating idea. This is fascinating, whether or not, you know, is Rage enough to be, you know, for life. I just feel like that kind of, in the later issues, it was kind of repeating itself a little bit, and I was wanting a little bit more.
But I'm interested to see where it goes, because out of all the books, it was the least likely one that I thought they would have given its own story to, but I'm kind of glad they did.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that Atrocicus himself is actually an interesting character.
Interested. I'll have to go back and have a look at that list of 300 comics that are out and see where Red Lantern is actually ranking in those ones at the moment.
That would be interesting.
Because compared to the other Green Lantern books, it's number 42, actually.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
It's in the top 50.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Okay. And given that, you know, well, probably all the bad books have taken up the top 10. okay, so moving swiftly along to Young Justice.
Right.
Which consists of Teen Titans, Blue Beetle, Legion of Superheroes, Legion Lost, Static Shock, and Hawk and Dove.
Boy, we can kick through this one really fast. Okay, let's say
two of those books have been cancelled.
Hawk and Dove, crap, it's gone anyway. Who cares? And what was the other one that was?
Static Shock.
Static Shock, crap, it's been cancelled. Who cares? Move on. Both books were just dreadful. Don't know why they were actually put out as their own books. Name another one. Keep going.
Legion Lost.
Confusing.
Confused.
Yeah, confused and confusing. I like it better than Legion of Superheroes, purely because I guess it's on Earth and it's now.
I'm liking Legion Lost more now than I did at the start. and right. maybe because I've got, I think it's gotten into a rhythm. Legion of Superheroes, I've never connected with the Legion.
No, my aunt used to be a huge fan of Legion of Superheroes. We used to talk about it all the time. She really liked Brainiac 5 and all this stuff. I've never been able to get into it.
No, it doesn't make sense. And when they actually introduced them briefly in that book we did ages ago, which was the Superman Secret Origin,
yeah,
that was like the weakest issue of the whole series.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's all Mon-El and, you know, and all this. It's like, no, move on.
Yeah. So Blue Beetle is one I quite enjoy, but you haven't gotten into yet.
No, I can't. It just doesn't. It doesn't. I've tried many times. I keep coming back to it and I keep reading an issue here, an issue there. It just doesn't connect with me.
I just like the idea of a superhero whose suit and him just don't get along.
No, I don't like that idea. I just don't think it's well executed. That's the problem. Yeah.
I'm enjoying it so far, but I think it could wear out its welcome soon. Mm. Now, finally, Teen Titans, which is probably the strongest out of the Young Justice set.
Yeah, I actually really dig Teen Titans. I think the reboot of Teen Titans is actually a really interesting reboot. I think they took some of the best elements of the original Teen Titans and gave it a really slick modern twist. I really like the reinvention of some of these characters. Like Wonder Girl was always just a clone of Wonder Woman, basically. It was her cousin and all this stuff. I really like the new Wonder Girl. I think the new Wonder Girl is actually really interesting. I really like the fact that they're kind of outlaws. They're kind of like skirting the edges of everything. I like the fact that half the team don't even know what they can do.
and they're also on the run. So it's this is the guy. This is Scott Lobdell who wrote this. Wrote like something like 60 issues of Uncanny X-Men or more. So he's always been good. He's well familiar with writing team books.
Right.
So, and I think that's really emerging in this, is this team slowly comes together.
I think it's very solid. And I really like the crossovers they've been having.
Yeah, no, like, and I think, and as I said at the start of the show, there's going to be a crossover with that Legion Lost, I believe, and Superboy coming up around the issue 8, I think.
Yeah, that's so, good, solid book. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Agreed. Okay, now the next is this kind of nebulous sort of title called The Edge, which is described officially as consisting of war, science fiction, Western crime comics, as well as those titles that used to belong to the Wildstorm imprint.
Yeah. I got to say, out of all of the sections of the New 52, this is actually my weakest section. I haven't been able to connect to a lot of these books.
No, well, three of them have been cancelled.
Thank God.
So three of them we'll go through quickly. There's actually 9 books originally in this series. And we'll take now OMAC, Black Hawks, Men of War, all cancelled. None of them were worth reading to start with.
No. I read the first couple of issues of Men at War. Didn't do anything for me. OMAC, I actually tried. I really tried. I actually read like 6 issues of OMAC. Just couldn't do it. It just doesn't work. Mm. It doesn't work as a book. And what was the other one that got cancelled? Oh, Black Hawks. Black Hawks, I got through one issue.
Yeah. My least favorite book in this is Grifter. Currently selling at 126th in the charts.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I really like there's in the last issue. I've actually kept up with this for reasons I can't explain.
I don't know why you keep persisting. Well, I guess it's the same reason I persisted with OMAC. You're just kind of hoping.
It's like watching a train wreck. Yeah. No, it's in one of the latest issues, and it's actually starting to cross over with Stormwatch, which again is another one I didn't get. Really. Someone actually says, you put a rag on your face and you call yourself a superhero. And I thought, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Exactly. And Stormwatch is a book. Wow. Stormwatch. My God. I read 2 issues of Stormwatch, was so confused, couldn't figure out what was going on, could never come back to it.
Voodoo is an interesting one.
Voodoo, I actually, God help me, I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth. Actually, don't mind.
No. I don't mind it either. I actually blitzed through, I'd read the first issue and then left it and then went through the other 5 or 6 yesterday. And actually thought, you know what, I think this is building to something okay. For a book that's about a stripper, an alien who's hiding in the body of a stripper and has some sort of, you know, psychic-like powers, it's actually going to an interesting place.
Look, the fact that it's all drawn and it's all, you know, it's all very sexual and she's very pretty and all this sort of stuff doesn't hurt the book.
No.
But I think there is enough in the book where they keep, just when I think I've got a grip on it, they they turn it into a different direction, and they'll introduce something like most recently, not this isn't the most recent issue, but like back like issue 5 or whatever, was when we discovered that the character who we've been following as Voodoo isn't actually Voodoo.
No.
And you sit there and go, no, I didn't see that coming.
Well, because Voodoo was actually a character that was originally in the Wildstorm series.
Hmm.
And it was in the book Wildcats that came out. It was created by Brandon Choi and Jim Lee back in, I guess it was in the late 90s, 97, I think it was. And so it's another one of those characters that's kind of come over from another universe. So that's why it doesn't quite feel as though it fits in the DCU, but it's a good book.
But every now and again, then they throw in these tie-ins. Like there's a scene where there's an episode where she fights Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And you sit there and go, where'd you come from?
He just turns up too. He's meant to be off somewhere else.
Yeah,
but
this is the Carl Rayner Green Lantern.
Green Lantern,
and
so
you sit there and go, aren't you off doing something?
Now, one of my favorite books in this thing, and I know you haven't gotten into it quite as much, is All-Star Western.
I'm having trouble actually getting started with All-Star. I read the first issue, and I just haven't been drawn back to it.
To me, this is really good, because kind of like if you're digging Batman at the moment, and that's kind of the history, this sort of history behind Gotham City that makes Batman wonder whether or not he knows Gotham at all.
Yeah.
All-Star Western is set in the 1800s in Gotham.
Right.
And you're starting to get some of the history in there as well.
Now, this is, for those who may not be familiar, this is the Jonah Hex book.
Basically. This is the Jonah Hex book, but it's also, it's kind of, All-Star Western was always an anthology Western book.
Right.
And the main book is a Western, and the second book has kind of a backup story about another character of the Old West as well.
Right.
And this is written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, who have done some excellent Western stories over the year, and they did the most recent run on Jonah Hex, so it's a strong book, and I know it's not for all tastes, but given how badly written Jonah Hex can be, this is actually quite a strong story, because he's got this guy that follows him around who really shouldn't be off on adventures, and he's kind of sort of a bumbling, almost a butler-esque character, but he is brings a lot of the humor to the book as well. So it's not just Jonah Hex doing really nasty things to bad people.
See, I should enjoy this, because I was actually a big reader of Jonah Hex back in the 80s. And I actually really like Jonah Hex. And I don't know, for something just doesn't grab me about it. And I'm not saying it's bad. It just hasn't grabbed me.
Yeah, no, look, I can see why it wouldn't, though. But it just sort of struck me. Maybe it's because I'm such a big lover of Westerns. It just grabbed me. But yeah. I really have enjoyed this book. Two other books in this family of The Edge is Deathstroke and Suicide Squad. Deathstroke, not really connecting with much.
No, look, I've never really connected with the Deathstroke character. He had his own book in Flashpoint as well. And I don't know, if something about Deathstroke just doesn't, I think he's a sub-character that appears in other books. I don't think he's I don't think he's his own book.
Well, the funny thing is, Deathstroke is one of those characters, I've always said, it's hard to do a bad character as the lead in a book, because, you know, they're not doing heroic things. You don't have anything to aspire to. On the flip side, Suicide Squad is how you do that.
Absolutely. Now, Suicide Squad took me completely off guard.
Yeah.
Here was a book where I went, oh.
Did it now, Puddin'.
Sorry?
Did it, Puddin'.
It didn't, it Puddin', absolutely. And I think it doesn't hurt that one of their main characters is Harley Quinn. And
who was written brilliantly in this book.
Yeah, and it's a very different Harley Quinn, with enough of the original Harley Quinn to keep you there, but they've added enough to her to make her own. And she's no longer just the sidekick of Joker. She is a true psychopath in her own right.
For example, in the second issue, zombies, I'm going to squeal. I love zombies.
Yeah, she goes, don't worry, I got a hammer.
Then there's something else. She's like the El Diablo's talking to Black Spider, who disappears.
Yeah.
And then she turns and goes, he pulled a Batman on you. And then says in a really quiet voice, ninjas are awesome. Just little things like that.
She's a wild character. And there's a scene in it where Deadshot, who is the leader of the team, is going, well, look what I've got. I've got a man-eater. I've got a this. I've got a that. And it gets to her from him. He goes, and I've got Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Cocoa Puffs.
You know who she's written like? She's written like Max from Sam and Max.
She is. She's completely unpredictable. I love her. I love that about her. And I think if you took her out of the book, I don't think it would be nearly as strong a book. But the fact that we have Harley Quinn as this presence throughout the book, and it's what we were saying about Justice League International. You need to have that one character who keeps you there. And I think the fact that they've got Harley Quinn. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with Suicide Squad with its latest story arc, because it's taking it into a kind of a different direction where Harley Quinn has escaped from the Suicide Squad, and she's off doing her own thing, and they're all trying to track her down now. So I don't know if it's going to stay as solid as a book or whether they're... I don't know quite what they're doing with it. And the last panel of the last issue is actually quite shocking, and I'm not sure where that's taking us. So, but a strong book. It keeps me coming back.
Okay, well, that's it for The Edge. Now, The Dark... I'm looking at the list of titles here, and there's actually more of these I like than I'd thought. We're talking about Justice League Dark, Swamp Thing, Animal Man, Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, Eye Vampire, Resurrection Man, and Demon Knights.
Right. Okay. So let's cut through some of the smaller ones straight off the bat. Demon Knights. You like this book?
It's got a good little vibe to it, but
I don't mind it. But it's not one that I immediately leap to.
It suffers some of the same problems that Shadow Pact did in the old DCU.
Agreed.
Justice League Dark is starting to grow on me.
Yeah, that was actually that had a very tough birthing process, I think. But it's actually finally starting to feel like a group of people coming together to work together.
Well, the most recent issue, they actually come together and they said, "Well, we didn't really have a choice to come together." And Xanadu's like, "Exactly." You know, you guys have to come together and there will be no choice, otherwise the future is doomed.
Yeah, do you know one of the problems I'm having with it? I'm not sure if it should have been called Justice League.
Because I agree, it should have been something else. Like the old Shadow Pact book, it was its own identity, but it was,
Yeah, exactly. The fact that, because there'll never be a Justice League. This is not the type of people they are. And so I just kind of
feel like...
They
live in the shadows,
Yeah, exactly. So I just think the Justice League is the wrong moniker for it, and I think that may have actually hurt it a little bit, but anyway.
I agree. But I think those characters could
the characters can carry a book. There's no problem there.
And I should say that as of issue 8, Jeff Lemire, who is writing Animal Man, will be taking over, and also Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, will be taking over the writing.
Interesting. Okay.
They'll probably pull all those together at some point. They're actually just about to do a crossover with Eye Vampire, which is also in this thing, because at the end of the last issue, it's either Xanadu or Xantana. I think it's Xanadu. It's kind of, "Oh my God, I feel the vampire force trembling," or something. And there's a disturbance in the vampire force. and in the Eye Vampire book, they say something about going off to the Justice League. But quickly, just before we move on, Animal Man and Swamp Thing. I dig both of these books. Both. I know you didn't like Animal Man at first, and it took me a long time to get into Swamp Thing.
No, actually, but, reverse order. I actually liked Animal Man when it first started. It kind of lost me. Kind of stuck with Swamp Thing for a while, but I actually got bored because I wanted Swamp Thing. And
which I think he might have finally turned up.
Yeah, I noticed on the front cover of issue 7 it says Swamp Thing Reborn. It's like, about time. So
it's one of the number 7s I haven't read yet.
Yeah,
so.
Me either. So I will reserve judgment on where that's going. At the moment, neither book is actually grabbing me very much.
Look, Swamp Thing took a while. I really like Animal Man. I don't know why. It just grabbed me at the right moment. Frankenstein, Agent of Shade's an interesting one because I liked this from the get-go. And you're starting to warm to it.
Yeah, I thought Frankenstein, the first time I ever saw the Frankenstein character, I don't know, he may have been in the old DCU, but the first time I saw him was in Flashpoint. He actually had his own book. It was actually called Frankenstein and the somethings. I forget it was. But they were basically also involved in the whole Flashpoint situation that was going on. When the DC's New 52 started, he got his own book. And I read the first couple of issues and thought, this just does not gel with me at all. It's just really stupid, right? But I stuck with it, and I got to say, it grew on me, and I actually really enjoy it. It's actually one of my must-reads for the month. I'm really enjoying the current storyline with the humanists.
Unfortunately, from issue 8, a new writer will be taking over.
And they do this to me every time. As soon as I start to like it, they take it away from me.
Matt Kint will be taking it over, and I don't know anything that he's written. Now, Eye Vampire and Resurrection Man, I'll deal with these quickly together, I think.
Okay.
Eye Vampire, both books, I think, kind of, I didn't really know what to make of them because neither, both of them were kind of characters I would either. Well, I think iVampire was a brand new character.
Yeah, look, I can actually live without iVampire.
It's an interesting book, but
it's just, it's not grabbing me though. You know, it's like, it's one of those books, which, it's kind of like Batwing where I just kind of feel like it's pointless. You know what I mean?
Actually, I take that back. iVampire is not a new character. It was created back in the 80s for House of Mystery.
Oh, well, there you go. Resurrection Man, however, I think is kind of fun.
It really is, and not least of which because it's had women in skimpy clothing running around for the last couple of issues.
I just love the fact that every time he dies, it seems to be in some grisly way.
Yeah, and then he comes back not too long after. I think it's got kind of a it might be a bit of a gimmicky character, but they've actually got some really cool writing happening on it at the moment.
Yeah,
so.
No, I actually don't mind Resurrection Man. iVampire, I think, is another one that will bite the dust. Sorry.
You think Resurrection Man will or iVampire?
No, iVampire. I think iVampire.
I think so too. Let's just have a look. What does the big board say?
What's the big board? Where's the score point?
It's at 124, which is just above Grifter.
Yeah, it's going.
Yeah. and way above Blue Beetle. The rest of the I think that's the dark done. So which leaves us with kind of the ephemera of the DCU, which is the one book that we haven't dealt with, which is DC Universe Presents.
And that's the last of the 52, isn't it?
Two. And also all the miniseries. But the last of the 52 is a book that we both enjoyed because issues 1 to 5 had Dead Man in it, who's been a great character in Justice League Dark, as well as the odd crossover into the unfortunate Hawk and Dove.
Yeah, look, Dead Man was, I say Dead Man because that for me was what the book was. DC Universe Presents Dead Man. And those, I think it was five issues. Five issues were really good. I mean, we actually talked about it on this show. I mean, the writing in issues 4 and 5 rivaled that of Sandman. I mean, it was fantastic. It was just a really solid book. And I thought, this is fantastic. And
it was written by Paul Jenkins, who's doing some amazing stuff at the moment.
Absolutely. And then I picked up issue 6 going, all right, here we go. More Dead Man. I opened the book and it's not Dead Man anymore.
No, it's Challenges of the Unknown from issues 6 through 8. And it's Dan Didio. It's really not catching me. It's really old school DC stuff, and not liking it. The series after that is going to be written by James Robinson, who is also writing Earth 2 coming up. James Robinson is going to do a series on Vandal Savage.
Oh, okay.
And that'll be issues 9 to 11.
This is very old school comic book writing.
Certainly the Challenges of the Unknown section is very much like that kind of old school 90s stuff. I have a little bit of confidence because James Robinson's been doing some terrific stuff lately. He's writing The Shade miniseries, and he also wrote the classic Starman series. So I think his run on Vandal Savage will be quite interesting.
All I can say is give Deadman his own book.
Absolutely. No, I think definitely. Look, that just quickly we'll run through some of the miniseries because even though this is not the new 52, The Shade, I think, is an excellent, excellent book that's out at the moment. It's a 12-issue maxi series.
I've really enjoyed what I've read of The Shade so far.
And I whipped through a whole lot of them yesterday, and it was just – it was one that I'd been hearing about for ages but just and been grabbing the issues, but I hadn't – actually had a chance to sit down and read them yet, and I did so yesterday and was really glad I did. The first 6 issues, that's halfway through the series, amazing.
Yep.
The other miniseries is the Huntress miniseries, which kind of suffers some of the same problems that we're talking about with Avengers X Sanction, in that it feels like it was setting something up.
Yep.
Ultimately, it had its own self-contained story, which
except
was good.
Except what looks like to me, looking at the artwork and stuff, it looks like to me that this new Huntress book that is coming out, which is one of the replacement books with Power Girl, is not the same Huntress.
No, it's not, because they set it up at the end of that book that there's going to be that it's Huntress and Power Girl because Karen Starr turns up at the end of the Huntress miniseries.
Right.
But in World's Finest, it's going to have Earth 2 versions of the Huntress and Power Girl. And I'm not sure whether or not what we read in that miniseries was Earth 2 or not. So, but yeah, it seems like they're different designs, so I'm guessing not. Because the new Power Girl costume is different. She's got a big P on her chest.
Which I just
The letter P on her chest.
Which I just don't like at all. Can I just tell you that?
No, you want the little window.
I want the little window. I want that.
Into her soul.
I love the fact that she never actually had logos and stuff. She didn't need them.
She was just Power Girl. Yeah, she had two logos, David.
She was just Power Girl, man. Just leave her alone.
And what were the other miniseries? There was also the Penguin, Pain and Prejudice.
Yeah, Pain and Prejudice. Interesting. I actually prefer the Penguin in Detective Comics.
Yeah, no, like I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah, it didn't really grab me, that miniseries. But.
No, and the other miniseries that's also currently running at the moment is, and then, once again, more Bat books, Batman Odyssey.
That's actually was started before the reboot, I think.
No, this is volume two. This is post 52. Oh, that was,
yeah.
And there was a volume one apparently, which I haven't read, but I hate this book.
Yeah, this is Neil Adams, isn't it? Yeah.
It's the character of Bruce Wayne is so out of character to anything that has been written before that I couldn't grasp it at all. I just reading it going, this isn't my Batman.
Look, if we're going to have the second half of a Batman miniseries, let's make it Kevin Smith's run.
We need a Widening Gyre part two. Come on.
Yeah, like apparently the Widening Gyre part two is like, I think apparently the third or fourth issue is almost done, like in terms of written and inked.
Oh, thank God.
So I think they're just waiting for the other two to happen before they release them.
And as soon as that is finished, we're doing that as a show.
Oh yeah. The week the sixth issue comes, the 12th issue comes out, we will be doing that.
Yes, we will be doing it.
That's a series. Look, that is your whirlwind tour through the last 6 months of the DC universe. Look,
it wasn't quite such a whirlwind, dude.
Sorry?
It wasn't quite such a whirlwind.
Well, given that we covered 300 and something issues.
Yeah, okay. We've really got to start reducing the page count.
Look, I got to say that this is probably one of the ballsiest moves and one of the most successful moves that DC has made in the last few years. This is like, you know, probably about their third crisis in as many years, but this is probably the most successful because they've actually what they've done effectively is rebooted an entire universe in a way that has given it a fresh coat of paint, but at the same time really made us look at characters we knew and love in a whole new light
and brought forward characters that we never thought we'd see again or didn't care about and made them interesting.
Aquaman,
absolutely. Keep coming back to that, man. I remember reading that first issue of Aquaman and immediately texting you. It's like, read this now.
And I did, and it took me 5 minutes. And I was like, you were right.
This is. I was the most. It was just an experience where I don't think I will ever have that experience again. Where you just read something and go, this was so unexpected, the most unexpected thing I've seen. Ever. You know what I mean? It was like, what the hell?
I think it's because we forced ourselves in that very first week to read all 52 books, which you know, yes, we bought into the marketing ploy and went out. And
sure, but also, I mean, we as comic book lovers, you're fascinated to see what they do.
And look, you know what? I'd say that there is, with the exception of the ones that have been cancelled and a couple of the ones that haven't been, we're looking at about an 80% hit rate.
Yeah.
And maybe 75%.
70 to 75%. Look, it's been a very interesting experiment. I don't think they can back out of it now. I think they're too far gone. I think this is the DCU as it stands today, unless Pandora comes in and does something completely outrageous again.
Yeah, and then comes in at issue 12 and says, right, folks, I'm going to make it all as it was.
Comes back in and goes, drizzle, 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 drum. Time for this one.
Well, the thing they can. They can in a lot of ways. I mean, they can just like make individual books back to whatever they wanted to. But I think the one thing that they've done really well, which I didn't get as much of a sense of under the old DCU because it was so confused, is a cohesive universe.
Yeah.
This is what we've got now. We've actually got a singular DC universe, which was why I'm worried about the Earth 2 stuff.
I must say, we had a singular cohesive universe until issue 8.
Mm.
and then we introduce Earth 2, multiverses, and everything else again. And it all starts going crazy again. Well, that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, well, look.
It's almost like DC can't help themselves.
I think, yeah, and they're probably setting up the next big crisis. But look, I think in 6 months' time, when we do this all again, and we'll look back at the first year of the DCU. I predict that we will probably not be seeing, we will not be talking about Captain Atom.
Nope.
We won't be talking about, we certainly won't be talking about the ones that have been cancelled. But,
we won't be talking about Batwing. We won't be talking about iVampire. We won't be talking about...
Probably won't be talking about Resurrection Man, to be honest.
No, probably won't be talking about Resurrection Man. We won't be talking about...
Voodoo.
We won't be talking about whatever this new GI comic book is coming out to replace...
I'm hoping we're not going to be talking about Grifter.
Grifter we won't be talking about. We won't be... there's a bunch of them. We're just
probably looking at Firestorm won't even make it out.
Or Hawkman.
Or Hawkman. Well, Hawkman's got... a lot of cachet, but maybe once they introduced Hawk Girl.
Hawkman will join the Justice League and will lose his own book. That's where I'm seeing it going. He'll end up in the Justice League, they'll drop his book. Because they want him around. They obviously like, and look, he's a dynamic character. He's got big wings. You know what I mean? He looks cool. But he's just not interesting enough to carry his own title.
I gotta say that I'm worried, man, Green Arrow is only 77.
Sorry?
Green Arrow is only 77.
He's only 77?
Yeah, he's number 77 in the charts.
That's high compared to some of these other ones.
I know, but still.
He'll hang out.
He's behind Venom 13.2 and Venom 13.4.
It's all right. If it makes you feel any better, they're different universes. Think about it that way.
That's all right. Yeah, that's true.
Think about it that way. And if Venom can keep his own, keep around for a while longer, so can Green Arrow.
That's true. Okay. Yeah. But so I'll live with that.
Relax. All right. We should probably wrap this puppy up. It's been going for, just under 2 hours. So let's wrap this puppy up. We will be back again next week. Next week, we're doing what?
Next week will be our Kick-Ass pick of the week. We'll be Kick-Ass.
Fantastic. And do you know what?
Kick-Ass 2, to be precise.
It's only 7 issues.
Yay.
Yay.
And they're written by Mark Millar, so we'll read them in like 20 minutes because like he writes like a really fast-paced movie.
Yeah. Well, the best part is I've already read it. So.
That's true. I've started reading it, so I'm on my way. Kick-Ass I enjoyed, and I certainly enjoyed more than the film, so I'll be interested to see how Kick-Ass 2 turns out, particularly if they're still thinking of adapting it at some stage.
We might actually even do a little bit of a recap on the first Kick-Ass comic book as well.
I think so.
Because it is different to the movie. So those who have just seen the movie, it's very close to the movie up to a point and then kind of veers off into two different directions.
Let's say we give that a quick recap. We'll talk about the film a little bit and Kick-Ass 2 and make a bit of a special so we can talk about that whole universe.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a good idea. So we will reconvene next week for Kick-Ass, and we should just explain that we've got some special episodes coming up. Richard's actually going overseas, and so you will find...
Not permanently.
No, not permanently. But you'll find for about, I think it's 4 issues or 5 issues of the show. They're going to be shorter than normal, and they won't contain news because we're actually going to pre-record a bunch. So that's why it's very important that you look at the reading list, because that reading list is what we're adhering to.
Absolutely. And so if you look ahead at the reading list, that's if you go to my site, therealbits.com, and have a look over on the right-hand side where we always advertise the latest issue, as they do on geekactually.com.
Yep.
But on my site, you'll see a little link to the schedule, which has the next 5 or 6 issues laid out there for you. So we'll be covering things like... a few classics in there, like Watchmen, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Trinity, and a few fun things like Punisher kills the Marvel Universe along the way. So, and of course, we'll be doing something to tie in with the release of the Avengers.
Absolutely, and that link that you're talking about is also on the Geek Actually page as well.
Oh, sorry. Well, there you go.
If you go, it's on the poster that says what's coming up. You'll actually see that link underneath. It takes you to Richard's page, so it's easy to find. Is what we're trying to say. You can always find the reading list, and you can read up in advance so that we can make sure that these episodes will be released in the order of that reading list.
Excellent.
Okay. Richard, where can people find out more about you on the internet?
Well, they can find me, as I just said, at therealbits.com. That's the R-E-E-L bits.com. And if you just want to have a chat with me, hit me up on Twitter at DVDBits.
And you can find me at geekactually.com. Or if you want to have a chat with me, you can hit me up on Twitter at David McVeigh. And I think that's a show, dude.
That's well and truly a show. We won't tell people that we had a few technical problems along the way.
No. Hopefully they won't even notice them. All right, dude. I'll see you next week.
See you then, David.
Bye.